Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. Today is May 18th. I should know that. Mount St. Helens, 25 years ago today. I should remember that. We're going to start with a work session. I'm going to open a work session on the possible introduction of committee measures. Representative Roblin?
Madam Chair, I move that LC 3618, dated May 9th, be introduced as a committee bill.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. He has moved that LC 3618, dated May 9th, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, this measure is introduced as a committee bill. Thank you. And I'll close the work session on introduction of committee bills, and I'll reopen a public hearing on House Bill 3478. And it is a continuation of our hearing that we started on Monday. And Patrick, do you want to tell us just what you told us on Monday, just for the record?
Certainly.
What that bill does.
It should take me a moment to find my information on this. This is the bill that would designate gray wolf as a game, adds gray wolf to the definition of game mammals, allows the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish a special status classification for gray wolves. It allows for the taking of a wolf without a permit under certain conditions if the wolf is causing harm to livestock. Directs the commission to establish a compensation program for persons who suffer loss or injury due to wolves, and to appoint an advisory committee to recommend methods for screening and paying compensation claims. It creates a wolf management compensation fund and continuously appropriates money from that fund to the commission for the payment of compensation claims, and also appropriates money to the commission to carry out the compensation program.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
We held a public hearing on this Monday, for the record, and we want to continue that today. And I see Representative John Dallum is in the room. Would you like to come forward? Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
You want to weigh in on this great issue, huh?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I had not prepared to testify on House Bill 3478, but this morning, before I went to committee, I got a call from Judge Dennis Reynolds, Grant County.
If you need to state for the record your name.
Representative John Dallum, House District 59. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I would like to submit testimony for Dennis Reynolds, Judge, Grant County, and I believe you have copies of that in front of you, and it is very readable, so I won't waste your time reading it. But I would like to say that we feel in Grant County, particularly around Granite, we already have wolves. This bill, 3478, would be a good step in the right direction, and we would urge your passage of this bill so that we might have a tool that would help us control the wolf population that we're absolutely certain presently exists in Grant County.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions for Representative Allen? Thank you very much for coming forward this morning. We'll certainly read that letter. I have several people signed up, so I think we'll just start taking some testimony. Warren, is it Amy?
Yes.
Okay, if you'd like to come forward. And Stephen Confori.
Stephen, don't make one call.
Oh.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Warren Aney of Tigard, Oregon. I'm a certified professional wildlife ecologist and a member of the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society, which is my professional association, and I'm here speaking on their behalf. The Wildlife Society is an international organization dedicated to the wildlife conservation through science and education, and the Oregon chapter is an association of about 500 wildlife professionals, educators, scientists, and conservation officers here in the state of Oregon. And our goal is to promote the sound management of Oregon's wildlife through science and science-based conservation and management. The wolf, of course, as you recognize, has had a long and contentious history in Oregon, but it now appears we're going to be getting them back. We have advocated, as I said, the use of science in sound conservation projects, processes, and also recognize the importance of having public consensus in these projects, and we think the Oregon wolf and wolf conservation and management plan goes a long ways in this direction. The plan, as we see it, attempts to balance conservation objectives that will result in the establishment of a breeding population of wolves in Oregon. It uses adaptive management strategies, and adaptive management is nothing more than it's a fairly rigorous systematic process, scientific process, but it's basically just learning by doing. You try something out, then you monitor it, see how it works, then go back and modify your original practice or change your original practice based on what you've learned through this monitoring. As other states have demonstrated, with effective wolf management programs, we can have a situation where humans and wolves can coexist in a multi-use landscape, and some other states that have good conservation management programs in place for the gray wolf include Montana, Idaho, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. We think that Oregon's plan would enable wolves to occupy different areas in the state, but it also provides management options to keep conflicts acceptable at acceptable levels. Specifically, here are some of the things that this bill does that I think are logical and necessary. First, it defines the gray wolf as a game animal and allows the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish a special status classification for this species. We think this is consistent with other aspects of the Wildlife Code, and it recognizes this species' unique management requirements. Allowing incidental take of wolves under permit by damage control trappers and the taking of wolves causing harm to livestock without a permit, I think recognizes the realities of field encounters that involve gray wolves and other resource users. And then, of course, there's the compensation program that this bill provides for, and this is based on a successful history of compensation programs in other states, specifically Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. It's been pointed out that some aspects of this legislation cannot be implemented because they conflict with current federal rules and regulations, for example, allowing incidental take and harassment. However, these aspects could be implemented if the federal rules change. And so it is appropriate, I think, for the state to have this program in place and in preparation for the eventuality that if the federal rules do change, the state can immediately begin implementing them and won't have to wait for another legislative session. We recognize that there's a concern about funding, and that we have a concern that this funding sources be identified to implement this compensation program. It should not reduce support for other wildlife management programs in the state of Oregon. I would particularly like the feature, I think, of allowing other public groups, non-governmental groups, to participate in this conservation program, because it's a good way, I think, to increase and broaden the support and involvement of a wide base of people in Oregon's future wolf management program. One other thing that's a little bit outside the scope of the current bill, but we are aware of the need for a good monitoring and management program when gray wolves start arriving in the state. The federal government will provide money for this initially, but there's no guarantee that this money will continue. So I think the legislature needs to be aware that adequate monitoring must continue and that this will require funds. And it's an essential component of the plan's adaptive management strategy. We thank you for this opportunity to testify, and we'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Mr. Kafori, did you want to say anything?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here representing the Wildlife Society, and I stepped out of the room. Obviously, an inopportune time. I thought that I had a second to get back before so I could introduce my client, Warren Annie.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Berkowitz.
Take a minute here. Ms. Hand, could you just tell me briefly, of the existing bill, are there portions you support or don't support? Because, as you know, I think we're now at four amendments and I don't think we've found a consensus on anything. And you didn't really specifically identify three items, Mr. and then you talked about the bill. Are there specific portions of the proposed bill or amendments that you do or do not support?
Chair Smith, Representative Boquist, our society hesitates to take an advocacy position. We'd like to point out that based on our experience with scientific management, that we see some features of this bill that fit our criteria for a good science-based or experience-based management program. And I think those are the ones that would define it as a game mammal with special management status, allow the commission to make rules and regulations that would implement that. We know there's some question about the incidental take of wolves under permit. Not the damage control part, but taking wolves causing harm to livestock, and we really haven't taken a real good close look at that from the standpoint of what's going to work and what's not going to work. But we do recognize that the realities of the situation require a certain amount of consistency and flexibility with regards to what we already have in place. And, of course, the compensation program. We think that's a real positive step, too, and a real good management program. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern, one of the testimony that just came, and it's something that has been an issue for me, living on the Oregon coast, we have listings of number of fish, salmon, for particular streams because they are unique wild populations. And so I get concerned, and I guess I'm checking to you from a scientific perspective. Here we have a wolf, and it appears that a wolf is a wolf, as opposed to distinct populations. And I wonder about that. And have you had any discussions about introducing a wolf that may have been indigenous to another area and has a pedigree that's basically in there? And is that the same wolf that was here in Oregon? Are they so on? And I don't know if you have an answer to that or not, and I won't put you in the middle of all of that necessarily. But it's frustrating to me that we don't seem to have an answer to that question.
Chair Smith, Representative Roblin, the organization was asked that question actually at the last session, and we did prepare an information paper on that, and I'll make sure that we get a copy to you. Basically, the answer is it depends upon whether you're a splitter or a lumper. And when it comes to wolf taxonomy, people are saying that what the old splitters used to say was that we had subspecies of wolf in Oregon that are no longer present. They become extinct. This subspecies that is now would be now becoming into Oregon was not one of those subspecies, but they're also saying that because of the taxonomy of the wolf, and you can't do DNA studies on something. Well, maybe they could, but something that no longer exists except as a specimen in a museum. What the current taxonomists are saying is that wolves roam so widely and interbreed so much that really we don't have distinctions that make much difference when it comes to saying that the wolf that we had indigenous to Oregon is different than the wolf that's coming in now. They're basically, for management purposes, for scientific purposes, the same animal.
Thank you. Maybe you could provide Patrick, the copies of that paper, and he could make sure the committee got that. That would be good information. Representative Berlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your written testimony, you point out that, or you state that, as has been pointed out, given the current federal status of the species, some aspects of this legislation cannot be implemented under the federal rules and regulations. I think what you mean is some aspects of the plan itself. You go on to say, however, these aspects could be implemented if and when the species federal status changes. If this plan were to be implemented and this legislation were to be enacted, would your organization support the downlisting of the wolf and the reinstitution of a 4D rule?
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, if the federal government downlisted the wolf, this would then turn it over to the state to decide what the status of the wolf is within the state of Oregon. And there is a scientific process to go through with the commission to decide what the status of the wolf is. It is in Oregon. And and what actually what rules the state would then apply under this particular management status. So if it, you know, it's conceivable that the feds would federal government would delist it, but it would still be insufficiently established in the state of Oregon for immediate delisting in the state of Oregon. So there would still be some protection measures remain in place as I understand the process. That doesn't mean that the commission wouldn't be able to allow some of these types of management practice to take place under state listing, even though it's still a state-listed species. And if I'm wrong on that, I'll check and make sure, but and make a correction. But I think the point is that is within the nation when it or within the lower 48 states when it becomes downlisted by the federal government, it could still be listed as a state threatened or endangered species, and then it would come under state rules and regulations until such a time as the State Fish and Wildlife Commission determines that it has become a recovered population within the state of Oregon and meets the goals which is outlined in the goal in the Wolf Management Plan as to what those goals are.
Follow up.
Please.
Thank you. Maybe my question wasn't real clear. As much as I'd like to see it delisted, the question was downlisting from endangered to threatened.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the January 31st federal court decision reversed the Fish and Wildlife Service, got relisted as endangered. And my question is, would the Wildlife Society support changing the status federally to threatened if this plan and legislation were all enacted and implemented so that we could have the 4D rule again with the incidental take permits, which would allow all aspects of this wolf management plan to be implemented?
Chair Smith, Representative Burley, I think I'll have to get back to you on that because I need to, you know, I'm not going to speak for the society on a question that hasn't been asked of them yet.
Okay.
Let me ask them that question and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have five people who have driven over 100 miles, so I'm going to call you. Phil Hassinger? Let's hope I say this name's right. Is he here? He is. Peggy Brown. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, let's get your is not dead.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. I might add, especially 100 miles from.
We got to know each other in the last 5.5 hours of driving.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Smith, committee members, my name is Phil Hassinger, John P. Hassinger, and I'm presently the Union County Farm Bureau President. And forgive the date on the testimony that I've handed you. We intended to be here Monday, but we couldn't fly on Monday.
That's okay.
Union County is a non-metropolitan county located in northeast Oregon, and it's removed one county from Idaho where wolves are presently located, and in fact, they're presently located in Oregon. Much of Union County's landscape is dominated by forests of the Blue Mountains, industries associated with wood products. There's railroads, ranches, and that's the primary export industries. About 45% of the county's land area is Forest Service and 18 officially designated as wilderness. And then 35% about 35% are farms, and agriculture is a contributor, a large contributor to the economy. And as I indicate in my written testimony, that commentary is to indicate that we are different than the I-5 counties. So it is tempting, as I said, to want to speak philosophically on this issue of reintroduction, and I will not do that. I will speak on the bill. And I would like to add a background of the history of the wolf in this area. And from 1870 through the mid-1920s, there was considerable amount of money spent on eradication and through the activities of the federal government in paying of bounties. And by 19, 1930, most of those wolves were exterminated in most of the states. Now, presently, in this year, 2005, the Endangered Species Act, presumably representing society, has said that they want to allow wolves back into their previous habitat. And the issue for me is not whether I agree with that. I don't. But I do believe that a farmer or a rancher must accommodate to society's demand, that is the ESA. Then society should, and when that is the case, then society should ensure that this activity that they've requested does not burden the farmer or rancher with additional management and financial loss. And that's what I really want to address today. Presently, Farm Bureau policy, state policy 926 says, and this is on the wolf management plan, the OFB should work in cooperation with the ODF&W to create a wolf management plan in Oregon. And the plan in that policy statement talks about compensation and economic loss from wolves. And recently, the ODF&W, since February, has come with some statutory changes which amend and define the definition of game animal, allowing take, allowing incidental take by trappers trapping other species, and establishing a livestock compensation program. These are, and this House bill is a good start to solving and answering this question of management plan. I would suggest then to add some amendments, which I have listed specifically on my written testimony, and you've probably heard most of before. I won't spend time reviewing that. But I would conclude in saying that part of the requirement in requiring additional management, for example, by a farmer or rancher after an encounter with a wolf, is another form of take. And it is a take of that farmer or rancher's bottom line and needs to be considered. The main issues addressed or asked for in the amendments are those of take and compensation. In the year 2000, there were three wolves encountered in eastern Oregon, which were documented to be from the Idaho pool, and two of them were radio collared and shipped back, and one was killed. And so they're here now. The question of a plan needs to be addressed, whether or not the federal has control of the situation presently or not. I appreciate the opportunity to testify to you today. Thank you. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Why don't we let Peggy go for next, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Brown. And I'm the Baker County Farm Bureau president, as well as a livestock producer. And what I would like to talk about today is the question of if versus when. In the beginning, when we talked about wolves, it was, you know, will they get here? If they come, what will we do? And now, as I understand, you addressed Monday that they are admittedly here. And now, what will we do? And currently, I have a story from a lady back home that this last winter ran into some very large tracks that she didn't know what were. It was on January 8th, to be specifically, after a very large blizzard in Moores Hollow, which is very close to the Idaho border. She was walking down her driveway to find out if she could actually access the local county road to go into town, and she had her border collie with her. And she came across these really large tracks, and her border collie's running ahead, and she's wondering, now, is this my dog slipping and sliding around, making these huge tracks? You know, maybe it's just, you know, the circumstances of the weather and such. And finally she caught hold of her dog and so that she could look at the tracks and see if they were ahead of her without the dog running ahead. And sure enough, there they were. And she said they were huge. They were like four times the size of this collie. And she said this is a larger size collie. It's not one of the smaller ones. And so she went home and she documented it and everything. And About a couple weeks to a month later, she ran into a federal trapper, and she described the tracks to him. And at the time, she was thinking cougar because, you know, they do have quite a few cougar over there. And he asked her, well, were the claws present or were they contracted in the tracks? And she said, no, there were claws in the tracks. And he says, that was a wolf track, most likely, and you probably need to be really careful and maybe not walk down your driveway unarmed. And there have been sightings in the area. So again, they are here, and now we need to deal with them. And this really epitomizes our fear as livestock producers of, we want to be able to be on the same page with ODFNW and work cooperatively with them and have a large amount of trust, because what they manage completely affects us, our bottom line, financially and economically. Another quick scenario before I wind up is kind of how we manage things. My husband and I are, I would say, mid-sized producers. So we have our cattle, our little herd, and here, probably the end of the month, we're going to take them and we're going to turn them out up in the hills. We don't see them for a week or two, sometimes three at a time. So how are we supposed to verify what killed an animal when we come across a carcass? And you know, it's not that we're lazy, that we should be up there riding every day. We can't, because we're at home putting up hay. My husband's in at work. I'm working. We have to have off-farm jobs so that we can make it. And this is very typical. This is not atypical. In fact, the larger producers, I would say, are even at a bigger disadvantage than we are, because many times they'll turn their herds out, again, this time of the year, and they will not see that entire herd again until this fall when they round them up. So now we're talking 4 months and maybe coming across carcasses that you cannot tell what killed them. They are picked clean. The bones are scattered. You know, how do we verify this? And this is exactly why we need probable compensation, missing above historic losses compensation, and why we do need to have a take provision if we do have the chance of roaming across the wolves as they are harming our cattle. Again, I would just like to end with, it comes back to when this will happen. It's not if it will happen. They're here. They're going to come across these cattle that, you know, the cattle are a lot easier to kill than those elk and deer. And the elk and deer, we already know, are fairly low in numbers from the yearly census counts we get from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And it's kind of funny because we jokingly call the cows on the range slow elk. Sometimes hunters not familiar with the area get a little confused and often accidentally shoot one of our slow elk. So it won't surprise me if the wolves decide that it might be a little bit easier to take a slow elk than it is to take a real elk or deer. I really appreciate the opportunity to come before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thank you to both of you. Any questions? Representative Sumner.
Ma'am, thank you for coming. If you lose a couple, three, four, six calves, spring, that's just a few. How few does it take for you to be really financially impacted?
It honestly depends on the size of your operation. If I lose one, that seriously hurts me.
I heard you.
If somebody who runs a 5,000 cow operation loses one, they're probably counting their lucky stars. So it really depends on the size of your herd.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much for both. Doug Breese, Colleen McLeod. Hope I say it right. I did, huh? Oh, thank you. And I'm a Smith.
I know.
The previous gentleman up here set an example, so I had to follow up.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Did you want to go first, Doug?
Whatever, that's fine. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Doug Breese. I am a rancher from Prineville, Oregon, Crook County. I'm
currently serving as president of the Crook-Wheeler County Farm Bureaus, so I would represent that constituency to you. I'm a past president of the Oregon Farm Bureau from 1987-1995, so I've been around this process a little bit. I did not present you with any written testimony, so I'm going to ad lib as I go along here. You've already heard many times, a couple times this morning and Monday, official position of the Oregon Farm Bureau as regards this bill. The one important thing, or the first thing that's important to my members, my constituency, is we really don't want wolves back. We had wolves in Oregon. I'm a fourth-generation rancher, so my family began ranching operations in Crook County in 1885. And I would not be ashamed to say that probably my ancestors had a little something to do with collecting a bounty on a wolf or two. They may have been better shots than I am, I'm not sure. So, anyhow, we've gone through this period of not having wolves, and we recognize the situation of the wolves returning. We recognize that they are not officially being reintroduced to the state of Oregon, that they are visitors from those states that have been officially reintroduced to wolves. We also know that once they get across that Snake River, they're not really wanting to go back very bad, so they're going to keep on coming our way. As a ranching operation, we are continually beset by predators of one kind or another. I can list several types of predators that I'm plagued with, most of which that we can work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife on, is whether I'm feeding 250 head of elk on 125 acres irrigated pasture, or whether I'm supporting some cougars that want to eat a colt or two. We have that happen to us more often than we really want to admit. So if we introduce another predator to us, then our livelihood is once again being affected by the predator that does come, in this case would be the wolf. We don't know how long it's going to take them to get there and when he's going to show up, but we do know that they're coming, and when they get here, they will start predating. This bill at least gives the state of Oregon the opportunity to have some management into the question of the wolf and the predation and the takings issues, and some opportunity for management, allowing livestock producers to take in the case of catching a wolf in the act, and also provides the format for a compensation program. The compensation program, of course, is important, I think. We haven't asked for the wolves to come back. You haven't asked for the wolves to come back. But society is demanding that we allow the wolves to come back. So it is a society issue, I think, just as the Endangered Species Act and many other rules and regulations that we're faced with on a daily basis in our operations. Livestock operations, cattle ranchers are a business. Crook County is a very large business to the overall economic stability of the county. And as it is in the rest of eastern Oregon, too, and even in the western Oregon. So we look down the road with trepidation as to what we're going to be faced with in the years to come. What's my son going to be looking at by the time I'm gone? These are the kind of things that we need to address for down the road issues. We recognize the fact that we have an Endangered Species Act on the federal level that needs some revision. We have an Endangered Species Act in the state of Oregon that could stand some revisions also. This bill at least allows the establishment of a format to start addressing some techniques that deal with those issues that we're faced with. And so we'd ask that you look favorably upon including some of the amendments that have been offered on behalf of the Farm Bureau, and you've received those. You know what they are. I don't need to go into a lot of time to reiterate those to you. So I guess just in the essence of fair play, I guess I would call it, I think it's up to this body to recognize the fact that we do have private property rights that should be recognized by not only the Legislative Assembly here, but also by society as a whole. So we would urge continued support of this bill and hope to get it on the books and as one step down the road. But the battle's not over at this point. That's my major point I think I need to make.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Colleen?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Colleen McLeod. I am chair of the Union County Board of Commissioners, and I drove down those 5.5 hours with the Farm Bureau members from LeGrand in Baker County yesterday. Unlike Mr. Hassinger, I kind of want to be philosophical about this just a little bit, and my testimony kind of addresses that. It is born out of a reflection of the disappointment in the management plan and its attempts at implementation. This is not the first time I've done testimony on the introduction of wolves into the state. It started a year ago in Newport when the commission was looking at what to do about it. And I have been disappointed in the process, so I excuse me if I don't address the bill exactly. It's sort of a broader sense of our feelings about this. I find it all pretty ironic. There are plenty of conflicts that arise in every level of government, and I'm not telling you anything new. That's no surprise. One issue that we are visited with in Union County all too frequently is people wanting to build a home on their property, and they run smack into conflict with ODFW's overlay of wildlife management areas. ODFW has on more than one occasion come before our county commission to protest the location of a prospective home due to its potential to disturb the natural flow of big game. They come with suggestions on where houses ought to be located or not located at all, and even to ask people to vacate their homes during certain times of the year to allow big game not to be disturbed. I wonder if anyone else sees that irony in investing over a year of so many people's time, spending an incredible amount of taxpayer dollars that's already been spent, and now asking for more just to determine how ODFW is going to disturb the natural flow of big game, particularly in my corner of the state. How will they do that? By accommodating the Canadian wolf. Can anyone tell me with a straight face this will not be the single most disturbing natural flow act we could do to deer and elk? Our public works director and our juvenile director in Union County both do an annual hunt separately in Idaho this year, and both of them came back with the same story. There were no deer and elk to go hunting in Idaho. Even the packers and trappers were coming out saying all there is are wolf prints in there. I was in the audience in Baker City when your committee heard the hours of pleading testimony on how we need to help protect ourselves from cougar threats and depredation. ODFW had to kill a female cougar next to our hospital in LeGrand this last weekend. People in town were asked to stay indoors. That hospital is 3 blocks from my office. It is right next to 3 schools. As you heard in Baker City, that's not an isolated incident. There was a cougar in my yard New Year's Day. Please do not compound our deadly cougar situation by throwing us headlong to the wolves. I hope no one here has a perception you'll be mitigating wolf issues by giving them a driver's license that says they're a game mammal. I hope you don't feel you'll be solving a public safety issue by placating with what appears to be very hard to prove compensation. Those of us who will lose our livestock, our pets, or ultimately our own personal safety and freedom to move about out of doors. If we've learned anything from the cougar fiasco, it's that it's impossible to control predators, and it seems pretty near a criminal act to continue to endanger Oregon citizens with another killer on the loose. If it makes it easier for people to see them perish, you can get clinical and you can call wildlife ungulates, or you can call the animals at my place livestock, but every one of my alpacas, llamas, and miniature horses has a name. How will someone on a committee perceive the value of what it would be like for me to lose my miniature mare, Sadie, who takes carrots and apples out of my pockets and follows me around like a dog? That is a subjective and impossible task. We don't want compensation or sympathy. We want safety. You've seen the photos of the carnage and damage that wolves are capable of. You continue to see the ridiculous results in the attempts to manage cougar population. At some point, we need to step back and say this is not a process to make some apartment dweller in Eugene feel spiritually fulfilled about the magnificent wolf. It is a public safety issue, plain and simple. My Board of Commissioners understands that, as do the boards of counties of over half the state that sent letters to ODFW over a year ago asking them to stop this. We spent the last year following the process about submitting testimony, watching in wonder the safety of our citizens take a backseat to some misguided need to restore predators. We have done what we can legally at home to protect our citizens. We need you to do the same. And what we did was ban wolf hybrids. But that's all we can do there. In April, the Eastern Oregon Alliance voted unanimously and asked you formally to not pass or implement any legislation that would accommodate the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. And I've furnished you a copy of that resolution also. We have attended and endured the year-long process of the Wolf Committee, which we found fatally flawed from the beginning. It did not accommodate the desires of citizens who don't want wolves in the state. The pre-committee decision was made that they were coming, and the task was merely to plan what color of red carpet we were going to unfurl to welcome them here. As an elected government official, I have always seen my task as to first do no harm. I expect you feel the same. That's what I'm asking of you today. Please do no harm. Bringing proven killers back to Eastern Oregon and then trying to pay for their damage seems both a waste of public money and public trust. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Driving down here and giving us your testimony. Ben Boswell. And Glenn, you're next. Do you want to come up with me? What? That was my question. I did decently for the motion.
Get my chair from wherever you are.
Okay. Representative Smith has joined us. Do you want to come on up? The other Representative Smith.
That's right.
GNP.
I defer to them initially.
Well, Ben is first, if we'll let him go first. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Smith, members of the committee. I'm Ben Boswell from Lostien. And as I prepared my comments for this hearing, that was before I had a six-hour drive to think about them.
I'm sure.
I'm not sure what I'm going to say.
It sounds like it'll be good.
I am a former member of the Wolf Advisory Committee to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and yet I come before the committee today as a lone county commissioner, the Wolf Committee having been disbanded. And at the time of its disbandment is when I wrote the report that you are receiving. Then I discovered that the planning process was ongoing, and I continued to participate in amending the plan and for consideration by the commission. And so in its final form, I'm not sure what I agreed to. But therefore, I can't say I support the plan. But I do. But I do accept it as a place to begin. And with respect to the work of the committee, it was to work on a consensus basis. And I don't appreciate a consensus process that ostracizes members of the committee that do not sign on to the plan. And in that respect, the work of Sharon Beck in representing the livestock industry was very well presented. She worked very hard, is very knowledgeable about the issue, and I don't appreciate having her singled out for a lack of inclusion in the process or the product. As for my own participation, I appreciate the consideration that was given, and there was give and take. And so, like I say, I don't approve of the plan as it exists. The commission made a couple of changes that in the details I don't agree with, and yet overall it's a place to start. I believe it will be necessary for the department to monitor outcomes and modify the plan in order to achieve its objectives. And speaking to the legislation you are considering is to be part of the plan. As presented, it's not what was called for in the plan. So I'm sure there's going to be amendments. In terms of amendments, I would propose that you follow the objectives that I have, or consider the objectives that I have proposed on the back of that sheet. For public safety, to protect persons and property from harm due to wolves. For economics, to prevent or compensate economic loss due to wolves. And I believe that public funds should be used for that purpose. governance to define the role of local government in wolf management. As Vice President of the Association of Oregon Counties, I can say that I'm aware that the national and state associations both have policies requesting the inclusion of local governments. Finances to secure an adequate program funding from appropriate sources. Again, I believe it should be public funds. And all I see so far is $100,000 for compensation in the House Chair's budget. And accountability to measure and evaluate the achievement of objectives. I have prepared what I've called the Wolf Index as a way to measure the accountability of this plan. And as you see, it is an attempt to do a cost-benefit analysis, adding up wildlife loss plus livestock loss plus nuisance loss. And that's where you include the small horses and pets that are not compensated otherwise. That over existence value plus viewing value plus hunting value, and as you see, if the value of the index is greater than one, wolves must be removed. If the index is less than wolves, wolves may be added. I feel I must comment again, as stated early on, the federal court ruling of the 4D rule. Going into the planning process, there was one condition. Now there's another condition. Those must be resolved in order for the plan as proposed to be implemented. The proof of the planning will be in the implementation. My comfort level with this plan will be increased only when I see that the department is actively monitoring and managing wolves to prevent conflict and accepting responsibility for problems that do occur. That this plan is adaptive will be proven only by making changes to respond to feedback from the field. As this plan is implemented, I urge the legislature to oversee the plan with more care than has been the case with other wildlife management plans. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
For the record, Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. I'm glad to see that you all have a plan in front of you, and I know you have it all marked up just like I do with all these little sticky notes, and you've read it and scrutinized it and so on. It's 178 pages that can't be read. It can't be read. You have to analyze it, and that's what I want to do today. I am so full of all the things that I want to say about this whole situation. I'm going to narrow it down.
Do I need to start the timer?
I also heard through the grapevine that there was a work group, a stakeholder group, or something working on making amendments. I assume the Department of Fish and Wildlife is part of that. But evidently, they feel the Oregon Cattlemen and the Grange and the Oregon Women Frag are not true stakeholders, so we've not been included in working on any other amendments. We offered ours on Monday, and there's been no comment about that. I've given you 3 pages of my testimony. I won't read it, but I will paraphrase it. And then I have 12 pages along with it, which are an example of an analysis that I've done on the rule. Now, we have to remember, there's the plan. There are the rules that the commission passed on February 11th, and then we have this legislation before you. There's these three things, and you can't just say the plan. It's all-inclusive. But I'd like to just briefly say what the wolf that we're all talking about is not. This wolf was imported. It's not an Oregon wolf. The Oregon wolf has been wiped out, according to the Fish and Wildlife Department documents, for more than 50 years. That wolf is gone. It's been extirpated. Now, they introduce a new wolf from another country into the state next door, and then to call it a native wolf of Oregon, it's not legal. Our Oregon's Endangered Species Act says it cannot be introduced, and it obviously has. They even say so. So here we are talking about something that we don't even need to be talking about as a wolf. It's a federal wolf. It's a federal experiment that we're talking about. And we know the horror stories. I'm not going to go into them right now, but you should know. Hopefully you know the horror stories of wolf enhancement programs in other states. And we could spend days talking about those. But I want to focus on this. Who creates laws? In the state of Oregon, who should create the laws? Now, should it be the legislators, yourselves, through this process, or should agency staffs and commissions, like the Fish and Wildlife Commission, should they create the law? And you know, it should be an obvious answer to that. I think you should have been totally offended on Monday's testimony when you heard over and over again why people oppose this 3478, this proposed law, because this legislation varied too much from the Wolf Plan. So they are driving you rather than you telling them what to do. So my question, in a sense, is what do you want? Should Oregon continue to waste money, the scarce funds that you have? Over $500,000 have been spent on this plan. Now, they'll say, well, only part of it was state money, the rest was federal. But that money was geared for fish and wildlife enhancement. Another story we can talk about. Do you want to continue to spend $500,000 each year implementing the plan? That's what they say in here. Do you want to do that? What do you want? Why can't ranchers defend their livestock against wolf attacks? Why must ranchers change their grazing program to accommodate wolves? You don't hear that. You don't hear that. They just say the plan is a place to manage wolves. It doesn't manage wolves. It manages ranchers. Everything is geared for changing or modifying your management techniques or finding non-lethal ways to deal with things. The compensation program we talked about a little bit when I talked about the amendments. Representative Boquist asked about that. That's not something we've asked for. And if there is a compensation program, if there are general funds put into it, I will guarantee you they will all be used up in cost shares and administration. We never get to a compensation. But this legislation is being sold to you on three false, and I emphasize false, selling points. And I'm only going to touch on one, but I would be glad to touch on all three if I had the time. Because most importantly to our industry is to be able to defend ourselves against wolf attacks. So that's what I've done with the rules that you have before you, and I'll briefly go through that. To be able to defend ourselves against wolves, our livestock from wolves, that's what's being sold to you. But on page 4, lines 17 through 27 of the bill, and I'll quote it here, a person may take, without a permit, a gray wolf that is causing harm to livestock. Now, this sounds good. If they stopped right there, it would be great. But it goes on. It says, if the commission has waived the permit requirement by rule. So we look at the rule. The rule's already been written. So we go through that. And there's several versions of take. I'll camp on one briefly. Says, you can non-injurious harassment. What can you do? Oh, you can shout at a wolf or maybe shoot a gun or something. That's one of the harassments that they would allow you to do. But you have to look at the words carefully, and they say only if. When can you do that? Only if the wolf is in the act of testing or chasing livestock or in close proximity. But this is only viable then if the rancher, and it's only viable, it goes on, and I quote, encounters the wolf unintentionally. And then they say, example, the person is not stalking or searching for wolves. How can one avoid conflict if you don't know where the wolves are and to scare them off? So if you're walking along out there and you see a wolf, and you say, can I holler at that wolf to leave? Let's see. Okay, I want to make sure. I'm going to go from their word. You have to realize that it's in the act of testing. You've got to know what that means. It's chasing my livestock. Or is it in close proximity? How close is close enough? I don't know. And if you can't pass all those tests, you can't shout at that wolf. Because if you do, you're in violation of the law. You can't make loud noises to scare off the wolf unless you've passed those tests. Now let's jump from that, and we could elaborate on that for a long time. I want you to know, how would a landowner ever get to actually kill a wolf that was to defend their livestock? Because that's what we normally think of. Oh, ranchers are going to go out there and kill wolves. But you know, this is a good start towards letting you do that, by golly. Well, let's see. In that process, and I quote the the Oregon administrative rules. That's the rules that I keep referring to that I've analyzed in the back 12 pages. There's three things you have to. Part of the rules talk about what have to occur prior to the take, during the take, at the moment of take, and after the take. And here's what it says: the wolf is in the act of attacking, which means, according to them, biting, wounding, or killing. Just chasing the heck out of cattle, or about to attack the wolf, attack your cattle. That's not it. In the actual. Wolf is in the act of attacking. A prior permit from ODF&W, if ODF&W confirms that the wolf previously have wounded or killed livestock in the area and efforts to resolve the problem have been deemed ineffective. So they're already saying there has to be somebody sacrifice some cattle. You, in their words and their opinion, have tried everything else you can do. And if you haven't passed their satisfaction test to say that you've done everything else, they're not going to let you do it. Now, what do you think the chances are of that? How many people do they have out there that are going to come out and check all of these conditions? And then it says the wolf is seen in the act of attacking, not testing or scavenging. So if you're going to have somebody from ODF&W, they're going to stand by a rancher, seeing the wolves, say, can I shoot? Can I shoot? There's the wolf. Here it goes. My cows are right there. No, not yet. He's not attacking yet. Well, can I shoot now? No, no, no. And at the moment that it bites and has your cow by the neck, the guy from ODF&W happened to see something and look away and said, can I shoot? And he said, oh, I'm sorry, what? Oh, no, the cow's down. Well, can I shoot it now? It's kill my cow. No, now it's scavenging. I'm sorry, you can't do that. Now, this may sound a little ridiculous, but these are their words, folks. They're not mine. These are what they put into the rules. They, meaning the Fish and Wildlife Commission, based upon what was the Defenders of Wildlife put forth to them to do. Then afterwards, there has to be fresh evidence of the attack, visible wounds, tracks, demonstration of a chase occurred. If you can't demonstrate that and you kill the wolf under every other condition, you can be arrested because you didn't do it properly. The wolf carcass is not removed or disturbed. Well, now, suppose the guy that shot it did everything according to the book, but other animals came along and destroyed the tracks or moved or pulled the wolf or whatever. Too bad. You're in violation. You must have reported within 24 hours. If a rancher, for some reason, some other emergencies, didn't get this reported within 24 hours, he can be arrested. And then the other one says, no unreasonable circumstances existed that attract wolf-livestock conflict. Did the rancher cause the conflict? What can a rancher do to cause conflict with a wolf? Add livestock, right? If you have livestock and you put them out on the range and you didn't do everything they ask you to do to start with hanging flags in trees and electric fences or whatever over those thousands of acres, you've caused the conflict. Now, I know I could go into compensation. It's just as ridiculous. They also say that, you know, all of this is geared. Someday we'll be able to delist the wolf. In Minnesota, there was a promise made to them 26 years ago, that when you got, or before that, they said when a certain number of wolves get in the state, we'll delist the wolf. That promise that the contract was accomplished 26 years ago, they still haven't delisted the wolf. So what I'm saying to you, and I've demonstrated, I think, at least to a certain degree, that there's these three things that are being brought to you are false. And I'll be happy with you or anyone else at any time to go through the other two things that I say are also falsehoods. But to a solution, I wish we could say, hey, look, this is not our wolf. Direct the commission to take the wolf off of Oregon's endangered species list. Then work with the federal government because it's their wolf under their jurisdiction. And they, if they're going to have it here, then make them pay for us to manage their wolf. There's no reason we should be squandering this money on their wolf. It's not our wolf. There's no doubt about that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Sumner?
Mr. Stonebrick, I wonder, could you give us some examples what has happened in other states when cattle and wolves interface?
Chair Smith, Representative Sumner, we could go on for days giving you that, but let me give you some people that I've worked with personally in Minnesota. That's one of the states where I spend some time, and I've talked with ranchers there. And if you think of the state being a little bit more tall than it is wide, the top one-third of the livestock industry in Minnesota is gone. It's wiped out because they couldn't live with the wolf. Now, I hear testimony from Defenders of Wildlife and Sierra Club and so on, and I've heard them say it, and then they'll say, well, people in Minnesota learned how to get along with wolves. How did they get along? Their industry has been wiped out. The wolves will come in to the barnyards where they kept bringing their cattle in closer and closer and closer to the ranch operation and in the corrals. One of them said the wolves came into the barn. This was happened to be a dairyman. The wolves came into the barn and attacked their livestock. He just said, you can't have wolves and livestock on the same farm. That's their conclusion. They can't do it. They've had compensation programs that have run in excess of $800,000 and it doesn't even come close. And they said, as far as this compensation program that Defenders of Wildlife continue to put out there, oh, we'll pay for losses, he said, don't even think about it. It's a farce. Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Smith, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Just very quickly,
sure.
If I may.
Oh, yeah.
Let me begin. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Moro, and the best parts of Umatilla County. I'll never be able to run for the Senate. Let me begin by saying, Chair Smith and members of this committee, I truly appreciate your leadership in taking on this very, very difficult issue. And I say that because you have a no-win situation in front of you. Let me also begin by saying I think everyone on this committee needs to understand that Director Lindsey Ball didn't ask for this issue. He did not go out looking for a wolf management issue to put onto his plate, and I think we need to keep that in perspective. The fact is this was handed to him and he was asked to manage it. The other issue I want to put up front just at the beginning here is I want to pat Craig Ely on the back. He is a constituent of mine in LeGrand, and he's a fine man who's also been handed a very difficult situation and is trying to do the best job he can within the constraints he has to operate under. So now, with that said, I want you to understand I represent those four counties. Prior to redistricting, I also represented Baker, Grant, Wheeler, Crook, Gillum, Sherman, Moro, and Wasco counties. And so I feel very well prepared to be here before you today to share with you a little bit of an Eastern Oregon perspective on what the gray wolf means to a quarter of the state of Oregon. Right now, if you look at the economy that we're having to deal with back there, we can't cut timber. We can't access water. Our Main Street is dying. Doesn't matter which community you're in, Main Street is dying. If it's not dying, it's holding on by a thread, trying to hold on. And now we're having to deal with a federally protected and a state protected animal that has the potential of decimating an entire industry, really one of the last surviving industries in Eastern Oregon, and that's the ranching industry. You know, wolves are not here. But the fact is, they're coming. They are coming. Right over the hill where I live, in Ukiah, a gray wolf was, I believe, trapped. I believe that one was trapped and not shot. And so they are coming. And you as a committee are going to have to figure out what's the best way to deal with this issue. The fact is, I represent good, honest, hardworking folks who don't want to be criminals. They don't want to be placed in that situation of being classified as a criminal. What these folks are trying to do is trying to maintain their business, take care of their families, and hopefully have something they can pass on to the next generation. This is what they've done for 100 plus years. And now all of a sudden, this issue is being placed before them. I know House Bill 3478 very, very well. I've had chances to read through it many, many times. What I'm going to ask you folks to do, as the decision makers on this issue, is just to remember who this bill affects. It doesn't affect folks in downtown Portland. It doesn't. It doesn't affect folks in Tillamook. It doesn't affect folks in Lincoln City. The fact is, the folks who are going to have to deal with the gray wolf are those folks in Wallowa, Union, Baker, and Malheur counties initially. Those states that line Idaho. Then you're going to have to deal with the counties in Umatilla, Grant, Harney, Morrow, and Wheeler. Now I ask you this question. What are you going to do? What are we going to do when one of those wolves dens up, has pups, and someone files suit? You're about to get yourself another spotted owl situation. Keep that in mind. I don't know the answer, but I do know we have an issue before us, and I know good, honest, hardworking folks' livelihood and the entire state's livelihood is at stake. Keep in mind, hamburgers at McDonald's do not come from the freezer. They come from folks on the other side of the state who are raising beef and feeding us. So let's not poke them in the eye. Now, very, very quickly, I want to give thanks to Sharon Beck and to Commissioner Boswell and Commissioner McLeod. These are the folks I answer to. And these are the folks that I will be following. And what I'm really hoping is that you will let them participate in this process. These are the folks who are the leaders of that part of the state who's going to have to deal with this issue. Listen to them. Take their thoughts into mind. They know what they're talking about. I understand you have to balance the interests of the entire state. I appreciate that. But please, please keep in mind, these are the folks who at the local level have to answer back to the people who have to live with the gray wolf. So please, please let them participate in this process. Take their thoughts into mind. With that, I'm going to thank you, Chair Smith, for taking on this difficult issue. Please keep in mind, we don't want our hardworking folks back home being classified as criminals simply for trying to take care of their livelihood and the livelihood of their children and the future of their ranches. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Berquist?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Representative Smith first.
Yeah.
We have multiple
She's better to answer it than I am.
Oh, no. You're on the block with the rest of us here.
All right.
Representative, Madam Chairman and Representative Smith, we'll get this time. We'll figure out this finally.
That's okay.
It's pretty much my understanding, and you and I have had multiple discussions on 3478, but before we started on Monday, it was pretty much my understanding, and looking for your opinion, that this House bill was kind of the summary from, for better word, the professional staff and the people that were involved with the Wolf Advisory Committee. Is that where you think it came from?
Yeah, really quick, Chair Smith, Vice Chair Boquist. Originally, I had a bill with five words in it, and it was shoot, shovel, and shut up. As soon as I realized that wasn't a realistic option, we started to put together a concept, and the direction was for the department to sit down with the stakeholders and to try and put a bill together that would work for those folks most directly involved with this issue and all citizens in Oregon.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. And I'm going to put Ben on the spot here.
Okay.
I know Ben and I'm doing this, and I need to kind of preface. I mean, Commissioner Boswell was a member of the Wolf Advisory Committee. He wasn't here on Monday. He wrote the minority report, but he was one of the individuals representing the stakeholders. He represented the county, and Sharon Beck represented the cattlemen. And my question, and I'm really looking for a wider and a more, I guess, philosophical answer, Brandon, because you sat on the committee, the advisory committee, is that between Monday and now, and my math could be wrong, so this may be incorrect, but I think we've heard for 6 or 7 or 8 of the stakeholders that were in and participated in the advisory committee. And not one, to include you, and I'm asking you the question because you're an elected official like us, not one of those groups agrees with 3478. It seems to me that if there wasn't a consensus, or what everybody agreed in. I'm kind of asking you to go back and look at this, because again, we heard from all the various ones Monday or today, and everybody's got something wrong with this bill that's supposed to be the consensus. And can you reflect back on, because we weren't there, we don't know what transpired, but it surely seems that what we have put before us, which we thought was supposed to be and represented as the consensus, frankly, isn't even close. And your thoughts on that? And I know you've spoken out on this issue before.
Well, Chair Smith, Vice Chair Boquist, the legislative proposals were those included in the plan, specifically the take provision, the reclassification or the designation, and the compensation plan. They were not fleshed out in legislative language, and I have been around checking from time to time to see where that drafting process was, and have not was never able to get a copy of a draft or provide input into the legislation. So I guess I'm somewhat in a quandary as to who a stakeholder is. I myself struggled with that in that I, as a representative of local government, I think we're co-agents of the state. We both have decision-making authority within our respective realms, and I had a hard time participating in the advisory committee as a stakeholder when I felt that we had a distinct role that was different. That being said, the language in the draft bill is not the language of the plan, and I understand a group of stakeholders met since Monday. Again, apparently, you know, I'm only counted as a stakeholder when we're tallying the number of supporters of the plan, but not as a stakeholder when it comes to you know, considering revisions to the language. So I'm a little unclear on that myself. And but there's no denying that the language that's in the draft bill is not the language that came from the plan. And yet we were never guaranteed that it would be.
Thank you.
I just have a statement, Madam Chair.
Yes.
And again, and I'm not going to point fingers or name names or anything, but I mean, Representative Summers and I think did the count. I think it's 7, and I think with the commissioner might be 8. Of the stakeholders, and nobody agrees.
Duly noted. It has been noted by the chair. That is also the consensus.
Chair Smith, just very quickly, if you may, I noticed on the screen just a moment ago there's a gentleman by the name of Matt Berkmeyer.
And he's going to testify next.
And I hope you folks will truly, truly take his comments into consideration. He's one of the most honorable men you'll ever meet. He's a man based on common sense, and is truly one of those type of folks who will try and find a solution that can work for everyone. And so I really hope you'll take his conversations into heart.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for coming. We are going to go to a video from Wallowa County Rancher, Mac Berkmeyer. Thank you for joining us. I don't think I've ever done this before. I wonder if you have.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me down there?
We sure can, and we can see you.
Okay. There's an awful lot of machinery to break down here, so we'll hope this works. Okay, I'm Mac Burkmeyer, and I'm a president, or was past president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and a lifetime rancher on Joseph Creek in Wallow County. One of the places where wolves are expected to come. Maybe not first, but probably about second. That makes it very personal for me. After 4 or 5 years of active involvement in the wolf issues, I have just lots of questions. I have listened to many wolf experts, wolf lovers, and the public at the many meetings and hearings I have attended. I've also listened to Idaho ranchers who are dealing with this wolf, and their advice to us is prevent it, do everything you can, because it's a nightmare. And then the other question, or one of them, why is Oregon so anxious to get in the wolf business? It's a federal issue. They brought them. It's kind of simple. They should pay for their removal from Oregon or pay the damage. Oregon taxpayers shouldn't be saddled with this cost or have to deal with such a divisive, contentious issue. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission seemed to me was just on a mission to adopt a wolf plan from the start. And why would they do that? The evidence from wolf states clearly show that game herds will be depleted. This reduces the ODF&W's income, and it increases their expenses. Now, in other states, it's $200,000 to $800,000. And then this plan doesn't have a real limit on numbers, and so where does it stop? And nobody's ever made good on delisting promises yet. The plan just said that they can consider delisting when they get the PACS numbers that they wanted. But when I asked the ODF&W personnel why they would throw away their life's work of building up game herds and the cooperation with ranchers and sportsmen, they replied it's the law. It's Oregon's ESA law. But then when you look at that law, it says only that those species indigenous to Oregon receives this protection. Now, to me, clearly, the gray wolf imported from Canada does not qualify. So the Oregon wolf plan is illegal and it should be thrown out. It's strange. The other states, all the wolf states, are trying desperately to get out of the wolf business, and we aren't learning from their experience. Instead, we're just plunging in. We desperately need a statesman leader to unite the wolf introduction states of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, and the invaded states of Oregon, Utah, and Colorado. And we need to stand up to the federal government and say enough is enough. An immediate federal delisting is necessary. There are enough wolves in the states, Canada, and Alaska to meet the needs of the wolf lovers. Further, the cost of wolf management and the damage costs should all be borne by the taxpayers of the United States. It's really whether these wolves can even be qualify for endangered species status now I don't know, that's a stretch. There's so many wolves. But the Oregon wolf plan was misguided and dishonest from the start. The town hall meetings wolf pamphlet, the one that was given to all the attendees on which to base their comments on after reading it, was a biased document. It was worse than that. It contained misstatements of facts, lies by omission, and downright lies. It was a whitewash of the wolf. It didn't present one negative aspect of the wolf. It defended him in all regards. It didn't give the attendee an honest appraisal. Then he was given opportunity to comment on the basis of this plan, and that's where they got that. Now, where did they get the information to put in the packet? They got it from the let me go back here. The ODF&W, in order to get comments in favor of wolves, allowed the packet to be written in part by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, whose job, by the way, is to influence public opinion in regard to accepting wolves. The other part was written by the International Wolf Center. Thus, the responses to the town hall meetings were all influenced by false information and should be thrown out with the rest of the plan. As a rancher who's cooperated with the ODF&W for a lifetime, I feel betrayed. I feel railroaded, and we were absolutely slam dunked by the commission at Troutdale. I'm opposed to a plan that advocates changes in ranchers' management instead of controlling wolves. I am opposed to the state attempting to increase social tolerance instead of dealing with the problem of these killers. The solution is to remove the gray wolf from the Oregon's Endangered Species Act and work on a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to remove troublesome wolves from Oregon. The other thing that I would offer as a way out of this would be a county referendum whereby the counties decided if they wanted the wolves. That seems to be a kind of a fair way, and if the counties wanted them, then when they encroach from Idaho, they could be taken from the counties that they encroach to the counties that wanted them. I oppose House Bill 3478 as it's written because it gives credibility of a law to a tainted wolf plan. To me, it just doesn't pass the smell test. I do believe that when you come to the... I know that I've not spoken to the plan in detail. You can't. You don't have time or to the legislation, but Glenn Stonebrink and Sharon Beck and Ben Boswell are our representatives down there, and I sure hope you pay attention to them. And I thank you very much for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Birkmeyer. Are there any questions for
the... I guess I...
Thank you. No questions. I don't see any questions. Thank you for your testimony, and I'm glad you joined us. Thank you. Next, I have Kevin Westphal and David Wiley. I'll call you up. We've got about a half hour left. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Westphal. I work for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I just want to take a couple seconds to clear up a few misstatements that we heard Monday. Some of these have been touched on before. Just kind of want to touch on them again. There was numerous members of the environmental industry that testified on Monday that of the original 14 committee members that drafted the original wolf plan, they said there were 13 who could live with the recommendation and only one who couldn't, the livestock industry representative. Now, contrary to that testimony, as Mr. Boswell pointed out today, both him and Mrs. Sharon Beck, the livestock industry representative, both dissented on that. Also at Monday's hearing, wolf advocates testified that the wolf plan was a result of delicate negotiations by the committee to come to a full consensus. Committee member informed me after Monday's hearing that, in fact, the reality is that the committee could only come to a consensus on one issue, that compensation should be paid for wolf depredation on livestock. The details of that compensation plan couldn't even be figured out in consensus. and an environmental industry testified that Mrs. Beck played a large part in shaping the compensation package for the wolf depredation. Now, according to Mrs. Beck, she presented the committee with a model for full and fair compensation, which she developed through numerous discussions with livestock producers and dog breeders. Now, the final plan only used pieces of that model which were identical to the Defenders of Wildlife compensation package, which in the Oregon Cattlemen's Association is far from full and fair. And I've attached a copy of that compensation plan she developed with my testimony. In addition to these, I just want to touch on a couple of statistics which I think are both important and relevant in this discussion. These statistics were obtained from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service annual report on livestock depredation in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Now, please keep in mind that wolves managed in these states are given far fewer protections than will be afforded to wolves in Oregon. From 2003 to 2004, they reported an increase in sheep kills of 28%, increase of cattle kills by 100%, and an increase in other animals killed, such as horses and llamas, of 34%. All these increases despite a 44% increase in the number of wolves killed that were preying on livestock. For numerous reasons, we urge your adoption of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association amendments to allow the livestock industry to protect themselves and their livelihoods from wolves coming to Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Any committee? Thank you very much. Just kidding. There's so much going on. I have Larry Jacobs, Jay Ward, and it's Brett Brimstrom.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think you can testify orally. You're on the list of questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Larry Jacobs from Washington County.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Larry Jacobs. I'm the president of the Oregon Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, commonly known as Oregon FNAWS. Oregon FNAWS is fully aware that eventually wolves from the experimental population brought into Idaho from Canada will expand into Oregon. Some of the best bighorn sheep habitat is along the Idaho border. And we feel that bighorn sheep will definitely be impacted. We would just as soon, you know, the wolves stayed in Idaho, but once in Oregon, we feel that they need to be managed by the state of Oregon and not by the federal government. We don't need a federally protected species, you know, in the state that has, you know, that the state is not able to control. A good example of this would be, you know, the sea lions at Bonneville Dam, where we're now looking to tribal governments for some controls. We certainly don't need a situation like this in Oregon. With that said, I believe it is important how wolves be managed and how this management plan be funded. In the wolf management plan, page 35, line 23 through 26, it states a strategy. In the strategy, you know, for special status animal, it states this classification is intended to allow Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to use existing stable state and federal funding sources and existing field staff to include wolf management as part of their daily duties. These funding sources include both federal wildlife restoration grants, also known as Pittman-Robertson funds, and fees from the sale of hunting and fishing licenses. This is the wrong reason for this classification and the wrong means of funding for this plan. Oregon FNAWS fully supports adding the wolf to the statutory definition of game mammal, but strongly opposes a special status mammal classification within the game mammal category. The game mammal category has worked for other large carnivores such as bears and cougars. It appears the standards governing a special status classification would provide additional protection measures for wolves, even after delisting, you know, that are not provided for other large carnivores. We see no need for these additional protections. This brings us to the funding. Oregon FNAWS strongly objects to any $100 being spent on wolf management prior to wolves being allowed to be hunted. Nearly all of the budget for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife comes from hunter dollars. Wolf management needs a separate funding source. Wolf management will cost a large amount of money. The fiscal impacts are not well defined by the numbers in the Oregon Wolf Conservation and Management Plan, but are estimated at about $600,000 for the first fiscal year of implementation. With only 280,000 licensed hunters in Oregon, to come up with the necessary revenue, the cost to each hunting license would have to be increased by $2.15. There needs to be a funding source other than hunter dollars, not only for the management of wolves, but also for livestock compensation and protection. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Mr. Ward?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Jay Ward. My address is 5825 North Greeley in Portland, Oregon, and I represent the Oregon Natural Resources Council. This winter, on behalf of ONRC, I testified before the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission and reluctantly supported the plan developed by the Wolf Advisory Committee. I say reluctantly because, quite frankly, we feel that the conservation members of that committee gave away too much. And our analysis revealed the committee's plan to be flawed in a couple of significant areas. First, the plan set way too low a threshold when declaring Oregon's wolf population recovered. By declaring the wolf recovered when only four breeding pairs existed in the state, the plan prematurely permitted lethal management of individual wolves. Those techniques should only be considered when wolves have recovered to healthy, self-sustaining populations. Some research shows that Oregon has enough habitat to support as many as 1,400 wolves, compared to that four breeding pairs is a drop in the bucket. Secondly, the plan wrongly allowed ODFW Wildlife Services and individual landowners to kill protected wolves on public lands. These wolves and these lands are the property and responsibility of all Americans, not just Oregon resident who holds a grazing permit. To manage them and their resources for the benefit of a few denies Americans in Nebraska, Kentucky, and the rest of the country their right to use and enjoy their public resources. That being said, we were willing to give the committee, ODFW, and the legislature a chance. We felt that the state deserved that chance to implement the plan and to study the results. Unfortunately, House Bill 3478 does not implement the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. In fact, it weakens the plan so severely that we no longer support it in its current form, something we have in common apparently with some other people today. To be candid, the legal landscape has also changed since the commission first considered the plan. In late January, Judge Jones correctly ruled that the Fish and Wildlife Service was wrongly attempting to downlist the wolf throughout its range. That ruling rightly reinforced the legal principle that endangered species aren't recovered everywhere just because they're doing well somewhere. Despite our misgivings, the committee's plan would have given Oregon the flexibility to negotiate a management plan with the federal wildlife agencies. This bill all but extinguishes that hope. So now Oregon's wolves, when they return, will enjoy the continued protection of the federal ESA. It means that Oregon's vaunted reputation for creative solutions will remain untested as the federal agencies write the rules for Oregon's wolves. While not ideal, ONRC can live with that status. But eventually, so too will the rest of Oregon. In fact, it'll eventually be good for Oregon's economy as well as its environment. This was brought home to me when I was flying in January. The Alaska Airlines magazine had a nice ad from Montana inviting people to come to Big Sky and featuring a rather charismatic-looking wolf there. And then the subsequent flight on Delta Airlines in their magazine, article titled Wild Things and the Best Places to Visit Them. The cover picture is a gray wolf in Yellowstone. It's time we acknowledge what the travel industry already knows, that clean air, pristine wildlands, and abundant wildlife are good economics. The original plan was a modest start to planning for that kind of future. It wasn't perfect. It was a start that would have given Oregonians of all stripes the opportunity to move beyond the vitriol and toward a shared sense of community. It was a plan that welcomed wolves back home to Oregon. Regrettably, HB 3478 makes that even more difficult. I urge you to reject HB 3478 and appreciate your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I have one question. You mentioned that you no longer support the plan. Are you talking about the Wolf Conservation Plan? You no longer support it?
We support the plan at its bare minimum, but we believe that this bill doesn't implement the plan as it was written.
So it's the bill you don't support?
Exactly.
I want to make sure I got it clear. And then you also mentioned that your objection to the plan was that the recovery, we had enough habitat for 1,400 wolves in Oregon.
Yes.
How long would it take to get there?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, the research I was referring to is a grad student at Oregon State who's done a habitat analysis. His plan, if memory serves, had a fairly long case to get there. I mean, it would take literally decades to get there. He was referring to the amount of habitat and the amount of prey species that were available should wolves, and apparently as they are, recolonize Oregon.
Could you provide me a copy of that?
Certainly.
That would be great. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anybody else here who wants to speak on this bill? Seeing none, since the committee isn't here, I'm not going to go to work session. It sounds like it's a work in progress, and I think we have a lot to consider as a committee. We'll be in touch with all the interested parties. Thank you very much. And thank you for traveling this distance. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3478. And we have no meeting Friday. We are adjourned.